Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk podcast. I'm Sam Basil, joined today by Kaylee Godek, William Bazone, Sean Vitalis, and friends, it's here. It's March. March is almost halfway over. I feel like, you know, not to get on a whole side rant just right off the bat on the show, but I feel like, you know, as someone who's been watching college basketball his whole life, it feels like March Madness starts just a little bit later every single year, but it's fine with me as long as it's here, right? So, like I said, we are in full tournament mode right now. As of the day before this recording, Richmond secured the Atlantic 10 championship, the Atlantic 10 women's championship, in a stunning 65-51 victory over Rhode Island. Their ticket is punched. And as of the day after this recording, so the day that this podcast comes out, I know I'll be heading down there, but all eyes will be on Brooklyn, whether you're there, whether you're watching on TV, whether you're listening to it on the radio. All eyes will be on Brooklyn for the 2024 Atlantic 10 Men's Basketball Championship. This is, you know, the most exciting time of the year for us, for the blog, for A10 Twitter as a whole. And, you know, we're going to get into it with you guys, but I just got to say I am beyond stoked for this upcoming week. I was stoked for this past week, and now it can only keep going for the rest of this week. But before we get into you know, a lot of the men's preview stuff, let's talk about the final thoughts on the 2024 Atlantic 10 Women's Championship. KG, I know you're shaking your head. You were part of a great crew that put together a fantastic women's basketball tournament preview. Initial thoughts on the tournament, maybe final takeaways from the game or any other big games. I know there's one or two that you wanted to talk about in this tournament that really kind of tell the story of what happened this year.
This tournament was tainted for me personally. Really tainted just based off of how one officiating crew screws over a big game in the final seconds of a game. George Mason, Duquesne, the 4-5 seed matchup in the quarterfinals on Friday afternoon, second game of the day. The refs misapplied rules and they turned two shooting fouls into non-shooting fouls within the last seconds of the game, which then ended up costing George Mason the game, as George Mason was the ones that would have been shooting. I can tell you this right now. Daniel Frank, who is one of our reporters on the women's side, they also cover George Mason men and women, as well as George Washington men and women for our website. They were not a happy camper. Honestly, I am speechless from looking at it from the officiating standpoint with everything I've done with officiating. And honestly, it really took away the chances of George Mason winning this game. And well, it was definitely very questionable with how that went down in the final stretch. But then on March 9th, the Atlantic 10 put out a statement that reads, "The Atlantic 10 acknowledges the misapplication of the rules by officials working the Duquesne-George Mason women's basketball quarterfinal game on March 8th. The decision made by the crew to reverse a call at the 5/10 of a second remaining was not permitted within the rules. The A10 apologizes to both George Mason University and Duquesne University, their student athletes, coaches, and fans, as the decision to review the play was incorrect and diminished the overall quality of the contest. The A10 expects the highest quality of officiating from experienced crews, and unfortunately, we fell short yesterday, impacting our student athletes and teams. The league office and the coordinator of officials has addressed the issue and took appropriate action and pledges to do better in the future." Atlantic, and this was posted on their Twitter account. Honestly, George Mason fans have the right to be upset. I totally agree with them to be upset, as, again, was very tainted. The players are upset. Again, all of it makes sense. George Mason is one of our top teams in the conference for a reason, as they can really do anything. They can come back from being down by double digits and somehow try to win a game. But yet they got stripped of trying to win that game by these officials. I don't know the exact action they did take, other than I do know that there was stuff taken for it, from what I did hear. Both of these teams should have a chance into the WBIT. For those who didn't listen to our women's basketball tourney special, just to clarify, the WBIT is the next tournament down right below the NCAA tournament. Then it goes WNIT, then the CBI. Just to clarify that for those who didn't listen to that. But honestly, that definitely tainted really the whole tournament for me. That's kind of what did it in. Like, I tried to watch the rest of it. I think I only missed two games, and it was the semis that I missed. But the Rhode Island Rams, I took a guess on them and thought they would make it to the championship. And while I got that part right, just didn't get our champion right. Rhode Island has not won a conference tournament championship still. Richmond just won their first ever A-10 women's basketball tourney since they joined the A-10. And they clinched the auto bid into the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2005. Honestly, the Richmond Spiders were really the stronger team of the two. They did definitely have fresher legs as they played one less game than Rhode Island did. But honestly, Rhode Island's "why not us" motto carried them through this season and carried them to have a good shot at the WBIT, just like St. Joe's does, as well as VCU. Really, all the top teams in the top six that didn't get the championship win should be considered for the WBIT and postseason play as they deserve it. Trish Mason fans, I feel you. I understand where that's coming from all sides of this. I honestly, watching that, I'm like, how did that get called back? As soon as a call is on the floor, the call is made within that last seconds of the game, it has to stand. But it did not stand, which kind of sucks. But I'll just say this now, unfortunately, with just how much the A-10 has beat itself up on the women's side, just like we do on the men's side, it's going to be a one-bid league this year. And it's been a one-bid league since the 22 season when UMass and Dayton both got in. When UMass got the auto bid and Dayton got an at-large bid before Ashauna Green left to go to Illinois. So honestly, my thoughts on this women's tournament was it's tainted, just because of how one quarterfinal game really impacts the whole tournament. Because George Mason women could have easily have had a run into the A-10 championships and could have easily won their first ever A-10 title, but it got stripped away from them in the final seconds of their game.
So we're a couple days out of, that result, right? That Mason Duquesne result. And, this is not me trying to, encourage Mason fans to, in for lack of a better term, get over it, which I don't think I don't think they should if they're still, pretty sore about it. There are less controversial calls that sports fans will be sore about for a lot longer, and all of them are pretty deserved. But one thing I want to kind of put into context here, obviously Duquesne, they got the 63-62 win in George Mason in controversial fashion. Then they lost to eventual champs Richmond 80-66. But looking on the grand scheme of things, this Mason team who clinched the four seed in the Atlantic 10 women's basketball tournament, did so 3 years after going 0-14 in Atlantic 10 play. As you mentioned, Daniel, longtime contributor to A10 Talk, longtime contributor to this podcast. Over these past 2 seasons, I would say, they have been really just expansive and encouraging over how far this program has come in such a short period of time. Like you said, it still stings. You should let it sting for a little while because it really sucks. Regardless of a women's invitational bid or not, what do you think is a reasonable timeline for Mason fans to think, all right, regardless of what happened, like we are headed in the right direction? Is that now, or we want to let it stew for a couple of days and then start thinking about the future? What's kind of your mindset here? I know you're not a Mason fan, but as someone who is still, a little frustrated over this result, what is kind of your thought process on Mason's future?
I'll just say this. Daniel has started to turn me into a Mason women's basketball fan, just because I've been dealing with the lovely 2-16 UMass Minute Woman this past season in conference play. So Daniel has been really helping me through the tough time and kept telling me it's not going to be any worse than the 0-14 season that Mason had 3 years ago. So honestly, I would say this is probably like, I would say at least let it sit, like sit and sting a little bit for another week until the Selection Sunday comes. But here's where Mason fans need to be happy. Mason fans do have a really talented freshman. Her name is called Zaza Walton. And well, we can refer back to it, having been mentioned a few times. I know at least in our group chats, for the women's side, Caroline McCombs, after their first game against George Mason, said, "We need to go out there and find a Zaza Walton." So honestly, Zaza Walton will keep this team up and moving. Kennedy Harris, who's another freshman, will keep this team really good. So honestly, the future is bright for this George Mason program. It's just if they can get a postseason play out of this now, that's going to be where the stinging could hurt a little longer if they don't get the postseason play. But honestly, just remember, Mason fans, you guys have a really talented freshman crew that's going to be with you guys for hopefully 3 more seasons. And well, they'll be running the league, honestly. This team really does know what they're doing and how they're playing. Even though Sonya Smith, I think, is a senior, so I think her time's done, but they lost Taylor, or Taylor Jamison's season's done at Mason as she's a grad student. But honestly, this team is a really talented team, and you'll have Nalani Keija back for next year after she was out with injury early on in the season. So, Mason fans, don't worry, the future is bright. This women's basketball team will have a great future, and success has just started for this Mason team.
So I think we'll all be waiting. We'll all be holding our breath for the next week or so to find out, if Mason still has some games left to play this season. But to move on to the team that we know is going to be playing more basketball this season, let's talk about the Richmond Spiders. As I mentioned, that was a pretty decisive, I mean, to say the least, decisive win over Rhode Island, in the A-10 championship game. They only allowed 7 points in the first quarter. They led by as much as 25 at one point, and they pretty much had this game in control from the jump. Obviously, there's a lot of schools still left to figure out their play. We got a whole selection show to do on Sunday for the women's bracket. Early thoughts on seeding opportunities for Richmond and possible beneficial paths for them. What's a seed that you feel like would get that's a fair assessment of how good this Richmond team has been, and also one that you feel like puts them in a good position to win, a couple games?
If I'm going to be honest with you, I hate saying this every year, but mid-major basketball on the women's side is so like underreceived by the A-10 tourney, by the NCAA commit selection committee. So honestly, I feel like anything above I'll say they won't get higher than maybe a 6 seed, but anywhere from like a 6 to maybe down to like a 13 would be very beneficial. It also will depend on who they're play like who they get placed in a bracket with. I know the last thing I saw was their portion of the bracket would be Virginia Tech would be the host from what I saw with the last bracketology on NCAA from ESPN's Charlie Cream. And he had them as I think it was a 12 seed. I'm just trying to confirm it up as I have it up right now. I know Richmond is going to be obviously our only A-10 team on this year, unfortunately. But honestly, this Richmond team does have a great shot in the future. Yeah, so they'll be playing in the Blacksburg portion right now, as it looks in the projection from Charlie Cream, against, funny enough, Utah, who took down St. Joe's earlier this season, as one of St. Joe's, or the only loss in non-conference play for St. Joe's. And they'll have Virginia Tech as the host. So it'll still be a close game, so fans could get out to go watch it, honestly. So I guess that's an added perk for this Richmond team. But also, I know this is not A10 related at the moment, but Fairfield women's basketball is also in this grouping. And Fairfield women's basketball last week just got their first ever placing in the AP top 25 at the number 25 spot. And I'm just more saying this as a women's basketball fan, as someone who I actually knew went to Fairfield and played women's basketball there, just graduated last season. But honestly, Fairfield women's basketball is trending in the right way. And the fact that they're also in the same bracket area as Richmond, just the 13 seed and Richmond's the 12 seed, is a small world.
Yeah, that would be a really fun matchup for two, great mid-major programs. So yeah, I think we'll really be interested to see where Richmond lands. But again, a controversial Atlantic 10 women's tournament, but I think, they sent a pretty good team to represent the conference. Moving on to the men's side, before we get into tournament scenarios, I kind of want to break down this final weekend of Atlantic 10 regular season men's basketball, starting with a wild finale to Friday 10. Sean, your Flyers took down VCU 91 to 86 in overtime. 21 points from Nate Santos. How would you evaluate this performance? Was this something that you like to see? Was it something that's, again, like we've talked about, Dayton has showed these kind of weird cracks, or are there common trends that you've seen that allowed VCU to keep it this close?
I thought great win. I mean, first of all, also shout out KG's Minutemen. We got some teamwork in there. You have
Thank you.
VCU, out of the double bye, put the Minutemen in the double bye for the four seed. But I think my biggest green flag from that game was Dayton can win from behind. We were down big early against a quality team. And we're able to come from behind. Obviously, had to go to overtime, which is never ideal. Obviously, I would have loved to win that one in 40 minutes, but no, I thought it was great to see them come from behind. I was a part of an interview with Kobe Elvis, who hit some wildly clutch shots down the end in that second half. And that was one thing that he even commented on, is he was like, we have a tough time coming from behind. He's like, if we get up early, it's like almost nobody's gonna beat us. But he's like, if we're down a lot early, kind of the opposite of that, it's really tough for us to come from behind. And I know I've said it before that Dayton runs a really, really slow offense. It's very methodical, very calculated. We shoot incredible percentages. One of the best 3-point shooting teams, mostly thanks to Kobe Brea. But Elvis knocked down a few, Santos knocked down a few. I mean, there have been a handful of games where it's like all five guys on the floor are hot, and everybody's knocking down threes. So I think that's something that, especially if we are gonna make a tournament run and end up playing a top five seed, because Flyers are slated really between six and eight, pretty much everywhere. So if we win a game or two and end up playing one of the top teams, then I think that's something that is a must have for the Flyers, is we need Brea to come in and have 15 points, go 5 of 7, have Santos knock down a few big shots. Because if that three ball isn't flying, I mean, if Brea comes in and rarely goes 1 of 5, but if that were to happen, that's a lot of points that we're taking off of, Dayton's scoring chart. So I thought that was great. But yeah, I mean, I think flaws, I mean, I think the pace that they play at is such an advantage sometimes, because they're in control of the tempo. I mean, you can get out and run against us, but as soon as we're on offense, it's our game. And so I think that's nice sometimes, especially when we can get ahead. We have a lot of long offensive possessions. So it's also tough for other teams to go on, score 12 points in a minute and a half, because we take our time. But at the same time, if we get down early, then it's a huge deficit for the Flyers. Very tough for us to go on a run like that. So I mean, I think that the pieces are there to make a run. Obviously have played not our best basketball at times. I think like losing to George Mason, That was one that I'd definitely like to have back. That loss to Richmond, definitely like to have back, putting up 47 points against VCU. But at the same time, there have been some really quality games. I think VCU, this one, it was a thriller. Definitely, I think my Dayton game of the season, I would have to pick that one, or like the 99-68 win over Rhode Island, Archie's first time back in the building. That was pretty killer. I was at that game in the student section. And that one was fun. There was a whole lot of aura around that game. But yeah, I mean, the pieces are there for Dayton for the next few weeks. I'm very excited to see how the A-10 tournament rolls out in the three seed. I'd love to see Baz and Loyola, because it was a great game in Chicago. So on a neutral court, super pumped to see what that might look like if that ends up being the matchup.
Yeah, the thing you mentioned about coming from behind, I think, is really important for this Dayton team, especially when you look at, not to dig up old wounds here, but when you look at how Dayton kind of got caught by VCU in last year's A-10 championship game. You look at the second half of that, specifically the last 7 minutes. What really allowed VCU to come, and just secure it was their defense, was getting those huge stops. You look at it, right? At 6:40 left, this is last year's A-10 championship game. With 6:40 left in the second half, Dayton was down 2 points, 56-54 to VCU. They would only go on to score 2 more points for the rest of that game. VCU would go on to score another 12. So specifically comparing how Dayton came away with this win in comparison to last year, do you feel like that was something that, maybe Coach Grant kind of emphasized with these guys all year? Like, look, we have to be this team. We cannot get put in a position like this ever again.
I mean, I think one big thing for us is like this year we got so many dudes that can do it. I think that's something that I wish they would do even more. Because I mean, Kobe Brea is a bucket, definitely my pick for sixth man of the year. I mean, just can come in and shoot four threes in a row and leave the court with 12 points, and Kobe Elvis, I mean, hit a few really clutch shots. Santos had 21. So I think that VCU game proves we've got a ton of guys that can fill up the bucket. And there is so much emphasis put on Daron Holmes. He's double or triple teams every time he touches the ball. And that's a huge part of the reason that we run the offense through him is obviously a great player. I think definitely deserves a shot in the NBA if he leaves this year. Because I think he's really worked on his game to get it to an NBA level. I think that he's clearly our guy, but I think a big difference from a season ago to where we're at now is just we have so many different guys that can get it done at different levels of the floor. Obviously Brea, I would say the number one 3-point shooter as far as just a pure 3-point shooter. I mean, I saw a press conference, I think it was at the Duquesne game, where someone asked him, who he models his game after. He's like, yeah, Kyle Korver, JJ Redick, Klay Thompson. And I was just like, that's an awesome three guys, where it's like, what NBA players do you look up to the most? You're like, do you model your game after? And like, Kyle Korver's your number one answer. Like, that's legendary. That's
That's
awesome.
locked in.
Yeah, I was like, that's a sick answer.
I would have loved if he included Steve Novak into that mix, but that's just me being a Knicks fan.
But yeah, so I mean, I think that he can get it done from 3-point. Duran on the inside, Enoch Cheeks, I think, a super underrated glue guy, someone that the players talk about themselves as like he's a huge part of the team. And Javon Bennett, I know I have talked about Javon Bennett a few times previously on the podcast, and like he's my like probably my favorite player on this team. I'm not gonna lie, like 5'8", generously listed, I think at like 5'10" sometimes. Which is like awesome, but dude just gets it done. Reminds me a lot of, as a Pacer fan, TJ McConnell right now, who's been lighting it up off the bench for the Pacers. And it's like he just goes in, doesn't have the craziest bag of moves or anything like that, but doesn't make any crazy errors. I think he's big. His return, whether it's in the A-10 tournament or March Madness tournament, I think his return could be really big for the Flyers as far as just like setting us on a clear path. Because he's a guy that came in, was going to be the backup point guard, probably like seventh man off the bench with Malachi Smith. Smith got hurt 5 minutes into the season. And it was kind of a similar situation with Mike Sharvejumps from last year, where it's like this dude came in, was going to be like a role player. It's like, shoot, here's the ball, lead this team. And Javon really took it and ran. So I think that's been awesome to watch him play. He's a great perimeter defender. And I think you asked like what's some key things for a tournament run, and like the Javon Bennett's presence. Having a guy like that on the bench, always great, but obviously having him in your starting lineup, he started essentially every single game until he was injured. And at one point had the highest plus minus in the A-10, just an all around really solid player. And if he's on the floor, Dayton's winning. So we have other guys that can ball handle. We have other guys that can play the point. But I think if Javon Bennett can get back now that we have the double bye, we've got, some bonus time to get him healthy and ready to go. I think that would be great.
Just want to say something quickly because you mentioned TJ McConnell. There's A-10 ties there. Do you know to what school, Sean?
I do not. I mean, I know, the Pacers have a few Arizona Wildcats on the team. TJ, I know, was there.
Yeah, he.
Mathurin, Benedict Mathurin was also a Wildcat.
So, while yes, he is an Arizona alum, he grew up in Pittsburgh, played 2 years actually at Duquesne. And funny enough, his sister is Megan McConnell, who's currently playing for the Duquesne Dukes right now. So just wanted to see if you knew those A-10 ties or not. But the McConnell family does have strong ties in Pittsburgh.
What a fantastic pull, KG. But yeah, Dayton right now in a really interesting position. Clinched the three seed in this year's tournament. Their best possible, if things go chalk, right? If we're just, we're gonna talk about tournament scenarios in a little bit, but if we're just talking things going chalk, highest seed advancing every single round, up to the semifinals. Dayton's toughest opponent at that point will be Baz, your Loyola Chicago Ramblers, who just clinched a share of the Atlantic 10 regular season championship with Richmond. They have the two seed because they lost their one game they played against Richmond, but with a tied record in Atlantic 10 play at 15-3, as far as the regular season goes, they were each able to cut down the nets, hang up a banner. And in previous years, I know this is not really a thing anymore, but in previous years, clinch a spot in the NIT. So I know that the three bid league media poll came out today. They announced Chris Mooney as a three bid league coach of the year. Official A10 awards will come out on Tuesday, the day that this podcast drops. A lot of people are talking Mooney, a lot of people are talking Grant. But depending on what your philosophy is for Coach of the Year, I feel like there are a lot of people who could put Coach Valentine in that mix. Will, just from your own perspective, what do you think the chances are of Coach Valentine being named A10 Coach of the Year?
I think it's a hard question to answer, right? Because, I mean, we already knew he was a pretty established coach, defensive coordinator under Coach Porter Moser for a few years in their tournament runs. They were consistently very good. Last year, I think, was just a fluke, right? They needed to adjust to the Atlantic 10. And, I think him being able to, be young and make those mistakes, like we know Chris Mooney is a good coach. He runs an excellent program at the University of Richmond. And of course, congratulations to them as well. For clinching the regular season championship with us, my sources are saying, and my sources are the Chicago Sun-Times, Coach Valentine did not find out that Richmond had won, lost the game, excuse me, until about 4 minutes left in the game when the Ramblers were up. So that was definitely exciting. And of course, being in Gentile on Saturday afternoon, certainly just an electric atmosphere. You just felt like the tone was different compared to last season. Obviously, a lot of people showed up, but this season, everybody believes. Third straight sellout. You've got them cutting down the nets. You've got just a whole celebration going on, and it's exciting. I personally, to answer your question, I think Drew Valentine should be Coach of the Year based on his ability to learn from his mistakes and demonstrate his track record that, hey, this was just a fluke. We're back. I'm going to go out and recruit smart, I'm not gonna, just find guys and throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. I'm gonna be smart and I'm gonna bring these guys in. And it's a very experienced group. He's got Braden Norris and Tom Welch, who were on that Sweet 16 team 3 years ago now. And of course, guys like, Philip Alston, who came in last year from D2, just stepping up as a leader. And, they've all been a big part of the success here in this program and keeping it going. I think I talked about it before. Braden Norris could have gone Power Five even before he transferred to Loyola. And the fact that he stayed here his fifth year when he could have gone somewhere else, I think that says a lot. And, a lot of the other guys who chose to came or to come here, I think that they know. They believe in Coach Valentine and his philosophy. And that for me should be enough to win Coach of the Year. And it's a sexy pick, right? I think because Loyola's kind of been a tournament darling as of late. Maybe the Atlantic 10 and its coaches might come together and be like, all right, let's just give it to Drew. But based on how things are going, they will most likely give it to Chris Mooney. And again, no disrespect. I think he's a very talented coach and has demonstrated his winning ability. But I in my deepest, darkest place of my heart, I do think it should be Coach Valentine getting that award.
Yeah, very fair. It's tough, because I think there that's one of the big cases, right? It's kind of like Coach Valentine, this team fits an archetype of Atlantic 10 Coach of the Year that we've seen in years past. I think most recently we saw it with Coach Urgo last year, right, for Fordham. He took this team that had been a pillow fight team, a bottom feeder of the A10 for a very, very long time, and he brought them up to a double bye. Fantastic. Obviously, Coach Valentine did the same thing in a shorter span of time, but like you said, last year was seen as a bit more of a fluke. So that kind of doesn't translate the same, but I still think there are going to be people that give him the nod like that. Obviously the game that helped them clinch this shared title was a 64-54 victory over the LaSalle Explorers on Saturday. As you mentioned, Brayton Norris had 10 points. It was a pretty solid, well spread effort all around. What from this game do you want Loyola to carry from Saturday into the, their first game in the tournament the most? I know it's kind of a long time. I know a lot of people, when it comes to double byes, can get kind of worried about the rest, but if there's one thing you would want these guys to focus on, what would it be?
To be honest with you, I just don't think it was our best performance of the year. I felt like that was one of those games where, like I talked about on the last time I was on here, it's, they kind of looked like they were walking to the finish line. Like they obviously they had something to play for and they showed up. They did their job for 40 minutes, but it didn't feel like it was a very much like, once they went up by double digits, it's like, okay, this game's over. But they weren't like it was really a defensive stalemate. Not a lot of scoring going on, physical at times, and I think what the biggest takeaway, again, as I've mentioned, is don't give up. No opponent is too easy. Take it game by game. And I think that's really just been the message all season from Coach Valentine and the players. It's just believe in yourselves, believe in each other, and believe in the fans that have supported you game after game, year after year, even when things aren't so great. So I think that's probably my biggest message. It looks like as of now we are trending towards playing St. Bonaventure again, but LaSalle or George Washington could make a run. I'm not saying they won't, but in all likelihood, we are playing the quickly downward trending St. Bonaventure Bonnies. I think that matchup looks a lot better for us now than it did 2 weeks ago when we were preparing for Dayton and we didn't look like we wanted to be there. A lot of mental mistakes. Now that we've played them, now that we've gotten that big quad one, first ranked win since 1986 at home under our belt, confidence is through the roof, and I think that game will be a lot different than what we saw a couple weeks ago in Olean. But that Dayton and Loyola rematch on a neutral court, I think, could be one of the games to watch at this tournament. I know a lot of people at Three Bid League or three the Three Bid League podcast, they picked Dayton and Loyola as the game of the year. The game of the year was the winner, I believe. But yeah, no, I think it'll be an awesome matchup to watch, and just exciting overall to be a fan in Rogers Park right now. I think this year, I felt pretty good about them. I felt good about the transfers and just the development made from, year one to year two in the Atlantic 10. Obviously, some of those games you want to have back in non-conference, but you can't go back and be a Monday morning quarterback and say what should have happened or what shouldn't have happened. So just overall, really exciting. And I think the biggest thing, just to finish it off, is just game by game, three more to go and get an automatic bid. Because if you don't, you're probably going to be on the outside looking in come Selection Sunday, in just 6 days.
And you mentioned neutral site, and I feel like especially with a potential Dayton Loyola game, that is about as neutral site as you can get for an A10 game in Brooklyn, right? I mean, I know, if we're talking geographically, I mean, Dayton's got, they're a bit like, I think they're like two states closer, right, to Brooklyn than Chicago is, but it's still a flight. You still gotta get people on a plane. So it'll be very interesting to see like what the fan turnout is for that. I know that when Loyola was at Fordham this year, there were a lot of burgundy, red, and gold scarves. So it'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, Loyola fans tend to travel pretty well. I'm sure the same thing with like when Dayton played Loyola all the way up in the nosebleed, you could hear a lot of Dayton Flyer fans. So I think both teams should be able to travel pretty well. It's in New York. I'm sure both schools have a big alumni base there, would not surprise me. So, and even for a lot of the people in the DC area, the Philadelphia area, it's a train ride away. You can be there to watch your team. I'm going to shout out all the Rambler fan podcasts. A lot of them are based in those areas, so I'm sure they will be there giving coverage and watching those games. So I think there will definitely be a lot of turnout and a lot of maroon and gold in the stands for this upcoming week here in Brooklyn.
Until then, though, that's we got 2 days of games before that. So let's just break into just breaking down each round here, starting off with the first round on Tuesday. We've got three games that day: 12 seed Fordham versus 13 seed Davidson, 10 seed LaSalle against 15 seed George Washington, and then 11 seed Rhode Island over four or against 14 seed St. Louis. Some pretty close matchups. I think a lot of these teams, they've had pretty even season series, when, anyone that was able to play a home and home with each other. For you guys, which game here jumps out the most to you as, not necessarily, they're all games to watch because this is the A10 Talk podcast, but as a game that you feel like might have the most sway in later rounds of the A10 tournament, what game jumps out to you?
Fordham Davidson. I really feel like Fordham Davidson does. Davidson's on a 5-game losing streak. Davidson did beat Fordham at home, like Fordham at Rose Hill Gym by 10. But the Wildcats have lost 5 straight games, and those 5 straight losses come to St. Joe's, Loyola Chicago, UMass, Dayton, and Richmond. And they also did play Fordham a second time down at Belk Arena and won that one as well. It's very hard to beat a team 3 times in a single season. We did see it happen on the women's side as Richmond did beat Rhode Island 3 times, but it's still hard to beat a team in three seasons, like 3 times in a single season. And honestly, Fordham's defense, may I just say this, is so wonky. Finally, having gotten to witness it. Last Wednesday, up at UMass in a game that I almost started crying in because without Keon Thompson, our floor general, it just got too close for comfort and that should have been a 20-point win, not a 2-point win. But honestly, I feel like this Davidson Fordham game could really be anyone's game. But I feel like Fordham may have a little bit of a better chance just because of Davidson being on a 5-game losing streak right now. And their last one for Davidson not coming since February 20th.
If I may, though, I just want to quickly chime in. I think Davidson, they had a tough season, right? I think they're a lot better team on paper than their record might suggest. They're a very sound defensive team. Again, I just think for me, I think they're a little unlucky, right? I mean, they've had some games where shots fell that shouldn't have, fouls got called that shouldn't have. I mean, even if one or two of those games just change, it could make a whole difference for Davidson's win-loss record on the season and give them potentially a better seeding. So again, I think it's a fair point. Obviously, with them being on a 5-game losing streak, you're not expecting the best, but you know, I think that's kind of fuel to the fire, right? Like, you've been so unlucky all season, and now is kind of your chance to prove yourself in the stage that it matters the most, and maybe make a little bit of noise into that second day if you get lucky enough.
KG, as he said, Davidson has taken this season series against Fordham 2-0, both games by double digits. And actually, it's funny because I mentioned quotes from the first Davidson game, actually, in my Fordham Atlantic 10 tournament preview on A10 Talk that just came out this evening. But one thing that really stuck out to me was when Davidson beat Fordham the first time, that was actually their first conference win of the season. They entered that game on a 3-game losing streak, all in conference. So it was kind of one that, Coach McKillop talked about. You don't like to think about wins in terms of breaking streaks or improving your record. You just want to take them a win at a time. But at the same time, it was one that Davidson felt like they really needed, or else things would go a lot further south than they kind of already have this season. A similar situation, right? Their last win at all was their win at home against Fordham. Like you said, KG, you described Fordham's defense as wonky. A lot of other A10 coaches have liked to describe it as unique. They like to throw a lot of different sets at you. It's despite Fordham's record, a lot of these coaches have talked about how tough Fordham's defense is to prepare against. But again, it's something I've mentioned, in writing about Fordham. Where you can kind of get them is, win the turnover battle, and Fordham likes to play rough, get them to force a lot of fouls and win at the line. That's something that Davidson did in that first game. They shot about 34 free throws. Yeah, they shot 34 free throws exactly. They made 27 of them. That's 21 points. That's 27 points at the line that Fordham, allowed. So again, like you said, while there have been these problems for Fordham, it's hard to beat the team three times. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. I think it's going to be a very close one.
I think GW could really give LaSalle a run for his money. Granted, GW just lost by 2 points to Duquesne on Saturday. They finally won a game for the first time since January 6th, this season, which was a 15-game losing skid. Or 16, I don't remember. But basically as long as some of our losing skids on the women's side that I was screaming pain about a few weeks ago. But honestly, George Washington, first, just want to say thank you for beating St. Bonaventure. You helped my team secure a double bye and get one of my hot takes correctly. Dayton also did too. So, Sean, thank you to your team as well as your fan base for that one as well. But I think George Washington could be very sneaky in this if they can heat up at the right time and if they can stay healthy. I think in part that our losing skid was not having everyone healthy and having players out did do this in a little bit. And did give him the coveted 15 seed. But honestly, I feel like that game's gonna be another good one. And I'm sorry. Rhodey St. Louis, that's just a pillow fighter. I'm in a pillow fight. I got no comments on it because it's two of my least favorite men's basketball teams going against each other, so I don't care who wins. I don't like Travis. Rhodey, UMass versus Rhodey men. We know that's a rivalry amongst itself, so I don't care who wins that. Other than I already know the winner is going to be wearing the color blue the next day. That's all I care about.
I think a very exciting game is Mason St. Joe's. The winner of that one plays Richmond in the next game. So they're going to take on the one seed. I'm definitely going to pick Mason to pull an upset there. Win the game. I would assume Mason would be favored as they're the 8 seed playing the 9. And I think Mason, having beaten Dayton, definitely impressed me in that game. And so, since Dayton's not the one seed, I'm just going all upsets here. I would love to just see chaos in the A-10 tourney. Blow it all up. Whatever happens, happens. Since my Flyers hopefully are in regardless of how everything goes down. As long as we can win one game, we should be pretty much locked for the March Madness tournament. So I think that one's super exciting. I think Mason really has a shot to pull an upset. I mean, beat Dayton. It's a much improved Mason team. And I think that they were super fun to watch when they took on the Flyers. I've only watched one or two other Mason games, but in that one, they impressed me. I think they showed out. And I as well agree, Rhode Island slew. Yikes. That one from a Flyer perspective, don't want to see Archie Miller win anything, as a Dayton fan. And St. Louis has owned Dayton in a few other sports, in the last few years, and were really killer, a season or two ago. So I'm personally enjoying that St. Louis downfall a little bit. But I agree that Fordham Davidson game, I think it'd be super fun. Davidson really gave Dayton a run for the money a season ago. Foster Lawyer, former MSU guy, at Davidson, was, he made it an interesting game, a season ago. So I think, Baz, KG, you set that one up really well. Davidson had a very interesting season so far. And yeah, I'm really excited as someone who has a team that's got the double bye. I guess all of us do, except for Sam. But me, KG, and Baz, all teams, the 2, 3, 4 seed. I'm excited. I'm all in on the chaos. I'm all in. We've talked so much about how, teams like really, I feel like any team could come out of this and win it. At this point, I think the top four teams most likely to win it, obviously, in that tournament, the way it's set up. But I would love to see, a run from Mason or, LaSalle pulling something out and winning two games. I think that that would be great. I'm all in on that. So, I think it's going to be a super exciting week overall. Fun to see UMass slide into the four and VCU drop to the five. I think that's a fun little, last minute switch. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, how that might affect things. Depending on how UMass and VCU, end up advancing or not advancing throughout the tournament, just how much, some other team, Dayton winning or losing a game can affect how our tournament works out. So I'm super pumped for the whole week.
Yeah, the Mason St. Joe's game is absolutely the one to watch. In terms of games that we already know, matchups that we already know about firmly. Because first we're gonna see two sharpshooters, right? Keyshawn Hall versus Eric Reynolds, both fantastic players. Keyshawn Hall, who has just been, one of the top breakout stars in this conference this year. And especially if, I think it'd be great if St. Joe's gets the win. It'd be a great matchup against Richmond. But if I could, play the narrative favorite a little bit, Richmond preparing for a team that just beat them to, squash their chances at getting the sole regular season championship in their opening game, I think would be quite exciting. And so for you guys, I mean, what do you feel like is the biggest thing that Richmond is going to try not to do or try to focus on, in a potential rematch with Mason?
Richmond needs to not choke.
They also, if I may quickly, they need to be good with ball security. I know it seems obvious, but for a team that's top five in Division One in terms of turnover per game and turnover percentage, 13 turnovers and only 46 points against Mason. That's quite alarming. So holding on to the basketball, being smart, Chris Mooney plays smart and disciplined basketball. So if they want to avoid losing two to George Mason, I think that's really going to have to be the big factor. It's just being smart with the ball, playing smart defense, which clearly they've done all season. And that, I think, could be a reason why they go all the way to the championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, Baz, you hit it right on the nail, honestly. Again, they need to not choke against Mason, but they also should be careful about who they could possibly get on Saturday in the semis, too, whether it's UMass, VCU, Fordham, or Davidson. I'm just saying this. It probably is going to be one of the first two I mentioned, UMass or VCU. Honestly, this UMass team, I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to talk about UMass yet, really. And again, Sean, thank you so much to your Dayton Flyers. UMass fans, oh, you guys big for that. UMass fans are really celebrating a double bye because UMass has not had a double bye in the A10 tournament since the 2007-2008 season. And funny enough, guess who was the head coach of that? Travis Ford, who's now the St. Louis head coach, who's probably on a very, very hot seat over there, but that's beside the point. UMass is probably one of the teams nobody wants to face in Brooklyn as they're heating up at the right time. They're on a three-game winning streak with, yes, two close ones to both Davidson and Fordham, but they can get their stuff done. Keon Thompson was ruled out of that game against Fordham just to let a toe injury heal. With that being said, he should be a full go as he's got a week plus now of rest under his belt. Hopefully, UMass should have Robert Davis Jr. back too. But Richmond's first real kryptonite came against UMass when they lost at home to UMass. And honestly, this UMass team has had a season of first 21 seasons since the 2013-14 season. First double bye since the 2007-2008 season, as well as, give me one second, I have the stats here. As well as the first win at St. Louis since January 31st, 2015. First win at George Washington since February 15th, 2014. First win at Richmond since 2012. First win at Davidson since 1998. And this is the first time with four or more conference road wins since the 2014-15 season. So it's really been a season of first for UMass. And honestly, keep an eye out for my UMass article that's going to come out with my preview. That should be coming out probably Tuesday morning at this point. But this UMass team, besides George Mason giving Richmond a run for his money, this UMass team can really give any team that's in the top four a run for its money just because UMass has beaten two of those three teams, both of which, or I should say, one of the three teams that are above them, but also VCU, who's below them in the top five. But UMass was only within 4 points at Dayton, 4 point loss to Dayton, and a 1 point loss to Loyola, where it came down to free throws. Honestly, if you look at the free throws, that's UMass's weak point. UMass can also really, really make up for it when they do make them. And they're starting to get to the point where they are getting consistent in making them. So any team is going to want to avoid UMass down in Brooklyn. I mean, UMass could really even make their first championship run for the first time since the 1990s. That is a very, very old stat. That stat needs to get changed before UMass leaves for the MAC, which I'm still not happy about.
Just like the one thing that you guys touched on earlier on was on like Richmond not choking. I think that can be said for any of the top four seeds. I mean, I think that's a huge thing, especially, as I do believe Dayton is, pretty protected at this point. I think we're locked in. But I mean, I think for Richmond, UMass and Loyola, it's win and in for y'all. And so I think that's, a huge thing is like, for a tournament team, you're looking at the championship on like we've got to win this thing, but you've also, if Richmond does have Mason, like they've got to get through that obstacle first before they can even think about, UMass or VCU most likely. Even Dayton, it's like we're probably gonna have to play Duquesne. That's the sixth seed team we're most likely to play, and it's a Duquesne team that, has really pushed us and not gonna be an easy win. And so I. Would love to see a Dayton Loyola semifinal, a Dayton UMass maybe, final. I think that would be fun. But, I'm just as worried about those first games that the top four seeds have to play, as the later ones. 'Cause I think sometimes it can be tough to, to not really think about semifinal or championship, you've got to get through that first round that you've got to play, and then it's like, all right, let's move on. And I think it's tough when you're playing games back to back days, when it's like you don't have a week to go and game plan for that next team or whatever. You don't have a huge break. I think that's tough, but you still have to take it, game by game and get it done one at a time.
Yeah, UMass has said that, like, their players have said that playing back-to-back days, that's their strong suit. So that's why I'm saying you better watch out for the Minutemen in Brooklyn.
It will be especially interesting for UMass too, because, as a team that says that, any team that's any of these double bye teams, they're gonna play one game, and then if they win, they immediately got a day off because of the new A10 tournament structure that they started last year, where Friday is now a press conference day, right? So it'll be interesting to see that. The last thing I want to get into before we get into, just championship game picks, I kind of want to put Baz, you back on the spot again. Talking about, again, just some tournament anxieties. I think where Loyola falls on the bracket is pretty interesting because, of course, you've got LaSalle and GW playing each other. And then you've got St. Bonaventure, which, like we've talked about early in this podcast, they're on a skid. There's no kinder way to put it. The momentum has left the St. Bonaventure program right now. So for you, and we've seen this before. We've seen this in a lot of conferences, but especially in the A10. You got a team that comes out of the first round and then gets a win against a higher seed in the second round, coming in with two wins in a row against Loyola Chicago. Is that a little bit, and of course, it's depending on the matchup, but is a team coming in with two consecutive wins a little bit more anxiety inducing than just, getting the expected seed in that quarterfinal?
Out of all the three teams, honestly, George Washington gave us the best run for our money, right? Like they were not supposed to, we were not supposed to, that is, be down to the Revs. I'm thinking of their new name now. I don't want to say the old name. We're down by 8 against them with like under 4 to play, right? It's like I that's a matchup I would not have to want to play again, right? When they're fully healthy, as KG kind of mentioned, offensively, they're really good. They're averaging 77 points a game on offense. So, I mean, like, I think it could be a fun matchup to watch. But in terms of tournament anxieties, I talked about this in my postseason guide. It's kind of a yap session over there. But I just think fouls and turnovers, that's really the biggest thing that stands out to me. I mean, we've talked about it with Richmond, right? Don't choke. Loyola hasn't really choked or had a reason to really fear choking, but there are just some underlying issues with the team that, are things to be aware of, right? Like if we didn't go 11 deep every game, our foul trouble most games would be something to be like ding 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 red flag, but because we go so deep, it's not a problem. And then turnovers, right? I mean, we just were almost 400 turnovers as a team this season, and 17% of Loyola possessions ended with a turnover. That's near the bottom 50 in Division One. As I've mentioned before, teams that I like in a tournament, either in a conference tournament or in March Madness, one, you got to play good defense. And number two, you have to be secure with the ball. Because in a game where you're not going to get a lot of possessions, and depending on who you match up against, you might get more. But if you don't, assume that you're not going to get a lot of possessions. You don't want to be ending almost a fifth of your possessions with a turnover. That would be disastrous. So I just think, again, fundamental basketball is what we've got to play. Take it one game at a time. And really, George Washington, even though they are the 15th seed, I think based on how we matched up against them earlier in the season, that was a near miss on an ugly quad three loss on that resume. Not that our resume already doesn't have a couple of blemishes on it, but that really would have been a stinger and could have impacted us, especially now that we talk about getting the share of the regular season championship.
Absolutely. See, this is why, tournament time is the best because, all these teams have played through this 18 game gauntlet. Every potential matchup has so much like of this recent history, so much of, we can reach back into the last 2, 3 years of it's just the best. If I could just, gush for a second, it's pretty great. So let's go around the horn one final time. Just a gut reaction championship game pick. Starting off with UKG. Give me this team is going to be this team, and then maybe a little a final score.
Well, first off, I have not said this yet. My first of my two hot takes from the preseason have stood. UMass finished in the top four. And I had some haters on this podcast when I said that. And they're not on this recording tonight. They know who they are, and they know I'm going to put a message out in that group chat. I just have not yet. But I finally got a hot take right. And we know my hot takes are always right from last year, no, re witnessing the KG curse. But honestly, I still have faith in Cross and Cohen making the all conference teams. I will say that. But getting into the nitty-gritty, I'm saying this right now. UMass and Dayton going at it for your championship Sunday. It's a tough one to decide between Loyola and Dayton, if I'm gonna be honest with you, Baz. But I have a funny feeling this Dayton team could really get Loyola on a funky time. And honestly, I have UMass over those Dayton Flyers. I see UMass beating Dayton for the first time since the 2017-2018 season. I have full faith in these Minutemen to make a championship run. And honestly, I'm going to say the score is going to be the reverse of what we saw in Dayton this year. I'm going to say UMass wins 64 to 60.
All right. Print those receipts, KG. We love to hear it. Baz, what you got?
Man, I mean, it's so tough. My heart wants to say Loyola in the championship game, and it really is possible with the way we match up, but I don't know how I feel about playing Dayton a second time. Especially, and I know you guys are looking at me like you're the Loyola guy. You should be rooting for Loyola to win, right? But I might go contrarian. I might go contrarian and say Loyola might not have what it takes to beat Dayton a second time, especially when the stakes are a little bit higher. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't see it as very likely. Because like we've talked about, you can beat them twice, but can you beat them three times? I don't even think this team could beat them twice. That's just my opinion. And I could be wrong. And a lot of people listening are like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But I think Dayton, they were a little fraudulent towards the end of the season, but I think as we've seen in these last couple games, they are very good. They are slow and methodical. But gosh dang it, they are efficient. They take good shots. They're smart shooters. Pretty much anybody can pull up from any spot on the court, and it's a success. And they don't turn the ball over. They don't really foul a lot. They are very clean. They're just a very clean team up and down. So I think that's really going to be what puts Dayton over the edge. You know what? We'll go Dayton and Richmond. I would love to see a rematch of that game. It could be, I know it's a little controversial, but I like that matchup. I thought that game early in the season was just awesome. It was a bloodbath in Richmond, right? Like for the first, what was it? Like 6 or 7 minutes, neither team made a basket. Like that's just like, that is the chaos of the Atlantic 10. And I would love to see that. I know. I would love Loyola to be there, but I don't know if it's going to be our year. I really don't. But if I could give a final score, I would have to go with 420 to 69. I don't know. I can't really. I'm not going to be a predictor of scores here. But yes, that is my matchup. Dayton and Richmond, 420 to 69. Richmond takes it. Dayton gets the at-large.
Love it. For the highest scoring game potentially, I think, in college basketball history. We'll
Oh,
see
yeah.
on Sunday. I understand the conundrum that you kind of find yourself in. Your team's really good, but it, you have a level-headed thought about how they might not be able to pull it all the way out. So I have to commend you on that, Sean.
I can be a guy who can go both ways. I'm not going to be a homer and be like, Loyola's going to go to March Madness, right? Like, obviously, I would love them to. And in a perfect world, that'd be great. But you got to play devil's advocate sometimes. You just got to see what happens and be a little more realistic.
You
Yeah.
don't want to be like me, who just did play the UMass will go to March Madness? Wow. I thought for sure you would have tried to play that card, but okay.
Nah.
Sean, what you got for us?
I'm in Baz's line of thought. I'm all in on a little Dayton Richmond 37-35 Flyers
It's
champ.
like
I think
it's
it'd
like
be
the Penn
awesome.
State Wisconsin game like 15 years ago. It's like 36-33. Like I'm like, is that the halftime score?
Yeah, I was just watching an NBA game. It was the Knicks and
Sixers.
yes. And I turned it on, it was like third quarter, and it was like 62-58. And I was like, what is going on?
It was the first game, you know, because I'm a Knicks fan, so I was watching that game. That was the first game in which both teams scored under 80 points in like almost a decade, which
Yeah.
is just crazy.
No, it was wild to watch because it was
Yeah.
like Brunson, as much as I hate Brunson as a Pacers fan, you know, can fill up the bucket. You know, he's a bucket. And so just like seeing a few guys, you know, toss up some bricks, it was cool. And yeah, I was all in on that. So I think that would be awesome for an A-10, you know, tourney championship game. It's like Daron Holmes leads all scorers 11 points. Like I think that would be killer. I think, but I'm also in with Baz. Flyers ticket most likely punched to March. Loyola beat us on the road. We're going to a neutral site. Super fun. I think I'm really excited. I would love for that matchup to happen. And I'm not so confident on the Flyers pulling out of that one. You know, lost to Loyola. I think we do definitely have that chip on our shoulders as far as like lost a few that we definitely shouldn't have. Shouldn't have lost VCU on the road. Shouldn't have lost George Mason on the road. Both of those were like, yikes. But not that they're bad teams, but I just think Dayton did not play 40 minutes of good basketball in those. So I would say if it isn't the 28-27 thriller of Dayton and Richmond, I would love to see the other two top four seeds of Loyola and UMass. I think that would be super fun. Teams kind of coming out of the cracks of the conference to join the top four. Loyola picked nowhere close, you know, in the preseason. And UMass, I think just like a really sneaky team. I mean, nobody's really throwing around UMass as like, yeah, you know, UMass championship contender. But here they are, you know, four seed. They got it done. And I was impressed with UMass early on in the season. So I think it would be fun for both of those teams to make a run. You know, Sister Jean, I'd love to see her in late March, early April. I'm all on in on the Sister Jean magic that Baz is familiar with. And then UMass, you know, KG has said it, have not made a run in a long time. Weird to say, but almost since KG and I were born, to date us.
Since
But
before we were born, because again, 1990s. I was born in 04,
true.
so way before
True, true,
me.
true. I was thinking of you threw out a stat earlier that was like the 7-8 season.
07, 07, 08 double bye, first time.
Okay, there we go.
When
That's what
I
I was trying to
was
think of.
three.
Yeah. So I think that's baller. And I think that would just be so fun. Loyola as a new team to the conference to make a run, you know, if they were to win it in their second season in the A-10, I think that's fun. Sister Jean, get her at the tourney. And then for UMass, as we just talked about, you know, have not done too much as far as playoffs go, in the tourney in quite some time. So I think, you know, I would personally love to see Flyers Richmond in the championship, but both of those teams, the other top four seeds, would be really fun to watch. And just as a A-10 basketball fan, I think it would be a killer matchup.
Absolutely. For my own, you know, I don't know if all you guys are familiar with the Jerome. I'm sure some a lot of our listeners will probably be familiar with it. It's like the annual competition where everyone, you know, a lot of people in college basketball media pick you know, their conference tournament champions. I want to stick to my own ballot that I just posted today. I did have Dayton winning the whole thing. I have them winning the Atlantic 10 tournament. I just feel like, you know, just this quote from Mark Schmidt just sticks out to my mind where he just talks about, you know, you have to win this conference with experience. Dayton's been there. They've been all the way there with this team and they've come up short. This Dayton team does not seem like a team that just, you know, like they kind of just let that go. You know, we talked about, you know, what killed them last year against VCU, what made it tough, you know, again against VCU on Friday, you know, where they've come up short so many times this season, but not so many times, but, you know, the times that they've come up short that have proven to be huge. So I think they're going to take all of that. They're going to really internalize that and come away with a win. As for their opponent, I'm pulling a Doctor Strange, you know, seeing all the, you know, potential timelines and whatnot. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff lining up with UMass going against Richmond, you know, and taking it. I just feel like if Richmond faces Mason, even if they win, I feel like a win against Mason is going to wear them out and give UMass, you know, if they can stick with it and they can force Richmond to make bad decisions, turn the ball over, they'll come out on top and then ultimately fall short to the Dayton Flyers. I'm going to go with, I think it's going to be a little bit of a high scoring game because I think these two teams are pretty offensively focused. So I'm going to go like a 71-67 game, which I feel like is pretty high scoring for an A-10 tournament championship. Sean, you had a final point?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something I didn't really point out, but like, I obviously don't want to see Dayton lose. I would love to see us win out. But if we did make it to the championship, for the sake of A-10 marketing, branding, viewership, it would be awesome to see
two
teams.
Too big league? Yeah.
Yes, no, exactly. That was precisely what I was going to say. Is from a Dayton perspective, I would love to win it. I haven't won the tournament in a number of years. Have won regular season, but not the tourney. And, you know, I think it would be great as a three seed to win the tourney. But, yeah, I would love to see the two bid. You know, the three bid was something we threw out early on. That's not really a possibility at all. And so I would love to see the two bid. I think it would be super fun to get, you know, whatever team would end up winning into March and see if they could pull an upset, make a run. A-10 teams have done some damage in the past. So I think that would be super, super fun.
Yeah, and I even feel like, I mean, this might be bold, but I think whatever team can go, you know, say Dayton makes it to the championship game, I think there are scenarios where if it's Richmond, Richmond can give Dayton a game and still potentially lose and might still have a chance at an at-large bid. I think anything is on the table. But with that, I think, you know, anything on the table is really kind of the story of every Atlantic 10 tournament. So with that, I think we're going to wrap it up for this episode of the A-10 Talk Podcast. Hopefully we can get one in before the tournament's over or, you know, by the time, you know, the NCAA tournament begins. But until then, you know, keep following us on A-10 Talk. Keep following us all week. Get on Twitter right now. And if you're not following us, you're probably not listening to this podcast. But regardless, make sure you have our post notifications on because we are going to be pumping out the best possible content for this tournament that you'll ever see all week at A-10 Talk. Keep checking out a10talk.com. There's going to be recaps. There's going to be predictions. There's going to be any discussion you can think of on our message boards. Just flying like hotcakes this week, all right? So make sure you keep checking that out. Where we're covering all your favorite 15 teams in college basketball. And so for Kaylee Godek, William Bazone, Sean Vitalis, I'm Sam Basil. This has been the A-10 Talk Podcast, and we'll see you guys next time.